Good afternoon. We'll call the Senate Resource Committee meeting to order. Let the record reflect it's approximately 3:35 this afternoon, Monday, March 14th, 2011. We do have a quorum here today, beginning at my left, Senator Stevens and co-chair Senator Wagner. On my right, Senator French and Senator Wilikowski. Senator Stedman is excused today, and I believe Senator McGuire will be joining us a little later. We do have in the crowd today an elected official, Senator Giesel. Anyone else back there? So anyway, that appears to be the elected officials in the room today. In today's hearing, we will continue with the Department of Revenue presentation that was begun last Friday. It is my intent, hopefully, to complete that presentation today so that we can proceed to the related topics later this week. But on Wednesday, the committee will receive the scheduled presentation from Mr. Lenny Deese on oil and gas credits, and then also on Friday, the presentation from Gaffney Klein on petroleum fiscal system designs. Both of those presentations are special travel arrangements have been made, so it is my intent to hear them as scheduled. And with respect to what we were originally going to hear today, which was the oil and gas production tax status report to the legislature, we will, with the will of the committee, reschedule that to a later day, and we will likely not even get started on that today at all. But anyway, given that, I would welcome Mr. Brian Butcher, Commissioner of the Department of Revenue, to continue the presentation on Senate Bill 49. And I believe that we had gotten to page 7. And Mr. Butcher, Mr. Tangeman, please identify yourselves for the record and state again your names, and then to the extent whomever is the speaker, please identify yourself, just at least the last name, so that the record is clear as to who is saying what.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, again, my name is Brian Butcher, Commissioner Designee of the Department of Revenue. With me is our Deputy Commissioner, Bruce Tangeman, for the Tax Division. We will pick up on page 7, where we had been going over the North Slope exploration drilling with the bars in blue listing from AOGCC the number of exploratory drills, wells that have been drilled on the North Slope, and an overlay in green of the price of oil during that time. I can't recall to what degree we got into this on Friday, but as you can see, ACES passed in the latter half of 2007 when there were 18 wells drilled earlier that year. Decisions had been made for 2008, certainly previous to the passage of ACES, and you can see that there were 16 exploratory wells drilled in 2008. And then as we move forward into the next 2 years, there were 9 drilled in 2009. There were 4 exploratory wells drilled in 2010, including 2 in Point Thompson. DNR estimates there will be 1 exploratory drill well drilled in 2011 on the North Slope.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Has DOR done any sort of analysis as to why we're seeing this decrease in exploration wells?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, DNR might be able to give you a more precise answer on that. It's our belief in looking at it that as the price of oil has increased and the exploration has increased in other states, that it's as a result of our tax system that passed at the end of 2007.
Follow up.
And that would be directly contrary to the opinion of the department of your department just last year, where your department said that you believed that there was an increased investment on the North Slope, and it was due to ACES?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I can't speak to whatever the department said last year. I can say in early 2011 that we can see now that there were only 4 wells drilled in 2010 There's also the estimate by DNR that there will only be one well drilled in 2011, and I don't think that was information that probably was in front of the department at that time.
Follow up.
When was this decision made? When did you come to this conclusion?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, that the reduction in exploratory drilling is a result of ACES?
Yes.
In discussions with the governor in the latter part of December and then after taking the job in January.
And do you agree with this statement or disagree with this statement? Quote, the good news is we are seeing a lot of increase in oil exploration. Do you agree with that statement or disagree with that statement?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I think you would, I can't say I flat agree or disagree with that. I think we are seeing more activity by the independents. But ultimately, I don't think we're seeing more production, and I don't think we're seeing more exploration wells drilled.
Okay. This is a statement by Karen Rehfeld, January 19th, before the House Finance Committee. And when she was talking about increase in oil exploration, do you have a sense of what she was talking about? The increase, the good news that we're seeing a lot of increase in oil exploration, do you have a sense of what increase she was talking about?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I believe she was probably answering a question in reference to the dollar amount of tax credits that were in the FY12 budget request.
If we could interject Senator Stevens and Senator French.
I'm sorry, I was putting out your staff list.
Oh, okay. Senator French.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I guess I would go back, and I think we touched on this last week, but I would just have the committee and everyone else who's look at the years 2001, 2002, and 2003, where you went from 16 exploration wells in 2001 to 11 in 2002 to 1 in 2003. And had we come to work in 2004 and decided then that we needed to reduce oil taxes to stimulate exploration on the North Slope, that would have been an enormous mistake. Something was happening then. And I'm not privy to those decisions, but I guess we would have missed out on billions and billions of dollars of state revenue in 2007, 8, and 9. And so I guess, I appreciate you're making the point that, we need to have more exploration wells drilled, but if that's really what we want, maybe we should just set up a fund and like Senator Wagner a couple of years ago said, let's just subsidize the first three exploration wells and see who drills them first. That'd cost us, I don't know, $150, $200 million, and we'd get the exploration wells we want. We'd get all the data that we should be getting, and we'd save the progressivity and other aspects of the bill for the state treasury. I think it's, that's a clear historical analog to exactly the same situation we face today, and we have to be very cautious about drawing connecting those dots that we think we can stimulate a bunch of exploration wells by cutting taxes when under a very low tax environment, there was exactly one drilled, no three. So more of a comment than a question, but thank you.
Possibly, Mr. Commissioner, in 2001, that's when the United States went through its first economic meltdown of the decade, and certainly 2001 and 2002 were, tough economic times in the United States. Is there any attempt by the Department of Revenue to look at a correlation between a collapse in the U.S. economic markets and the decline of exploration drilling in 2003?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We've taken a look at other states, and although in some states there wasn't a dip, in some states there was a dip as a result of that. As 2010 came and then 2011, with the price of oil climbing back up again, it began to increase. And as you can see on the slide, in Alaska, it not only didn't increase, it continued to decrease. But we can certainly provide you more information on that.
The record should reflect that we're joined by Senator McGuire. The correlation that I'm trying to look to here is in 2001, we have the collapse of the U.S. Economy. In 2008, we have the collapse of both the U.S. and the world economy. And it seems like there is a correlation between those collapse dates and the number of exploratory wells that were drilled.
Mr. Chairman, it's not a correlation you can see in some of the other states, and we'd be happy to provide a slide for you showing that.
And as part of that, can you break out gas exploration wells as compared to oil? Because I think that that's with the shale explosion and the lower 48, we have to be very careful with that.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we will do our best on that. The fact that we haven't had a slide that we've already shown you is the difficulty of doing that and not wanting to appear deceptive in comparing something as if it was apples and apples when it's not.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are you familiar with is it your understanding that these are all single company wells? In other words, in 2009, 2008, were those wells drilled in areas by each well by one single company, or do companies work together when they drill wells?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I know companies work together when drilling wells at times. I don't have the specifics on that. I can certainly get it to you, or I don't know if Joe Balash is in the room, somebody that would have a little bit more detail on the development side of things in DOR, but we can certainly get back to you on that.
Yeah, if you could. And also, are you aware that companies have agreements with each other such that if one company that was going to drill a well decides not to drill a well, then the other companies don't drill the well either? Are you aware of agreements to that effect?
I am not. Sent through the chair, I am not, Senator Wilikowski.
Okay. If you could look into that as well. My understanding is that if Conoco and BP decide they want to drill a well, and then BP, because of some financial disaster, says we're not going to do that well, the well doesn't get drilled. But if you could look into that and see if there's any sort of interplay in this drop.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we'd be happy to do that. And those are also good questions for when the industry's up. We could probably give you a little bit more detail.
One of the questions that I was trying to ascertain is, in a mature elephant field where the undiscovered but likely recoverable volume of oil, is there a pattern in whether there's a natural decline in the number of exploration wells simply because there are fewer undiscovered, potentially recoverable barrels of oil out there?
Through the chair, we'll have to get back to you on that. I don't know the specifics. We've been digging into a little bit what the natural evolution and decline of a field is. We've seen a number of different things, but it might be something for DNR to give a short presentation on.
And, for example, 10 or 12 years ago, it's likely that Central North Slope had 7 billion barrels of undiscovered potentially recoverable oil. Now, according to USGS, the Central North Slope has 4 billion barrels of undiscovered potentially recoverable oil. Is there a natural decline when one goes from 7 to 4 over that 10 or 12-year period? That's kind of what I'm looking at. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are the company producers, explorers required to tell you of their future drilling plans?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, there is information shared between the companies and the Department of Revenue. I don't know. Maybe Sherry Nienhuis can come up and enlighten you a little bit more about what it is we get from them and how detailed it is.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Sherry Nienhuis. I'm a petroleum economist with the Department of Revenue. My understanding is that the companies do file plans of development with the Department of Natural Resources, and our production forecaster does have access to those plans of development.
Follow up.
Yeah, and how much in advance are they required to give you that notice?
I'm sorry, Senator Wilikowski, through the chair. I'm not really sure how often they'll file those.
Okay. Are you aware of the future drilling plans in 2011, 2012, 2013?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, I believe our production forecaster would review those plans with the industry, with the operators, prior to doing the forecast. So I would think that he would have access to that information.
Does Mr. Butcher know the answer to that question?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I do not. We can have Mr. Molly, Frank Molly, as our production forecaster. We can have him call into the meeting today if you'd like to give you some more detail on that.
I would like to have that information, Mr. Chairman. And let me just ask you this. If there were to be an increase in the number of projected wells drilled, would that change your opinion of whether or not we need to roll back ACES?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, that would certainly be a sign that there began to would be one piece of it, certainly. There more exploration wouldn't necessarily lead to more production because, you know, we don't know the success of the exploration wells, but it would show a difference to the current decline we've been seeing.
Just as a quick question following up on what Senator Wilkowski was asking, is there a number, how far into the future do the exploration plans that the state receives, how far out in the future do those go?
Mr. Chairman, I believe it probably varies. For example, I believe that we received some pretty comprehensive information from developers of certain units. I know there was one in particular I'm thinking of that some royalty relief was granted, and I know that we received several years' worth of information on that. As far as other plans of development, they may be a shorter-term project-oriented plan of development. But again, I think if you want to know any more than that, you should probably consult with the Department of Natural Resources.
Senator French.
Thank you. And this goes back to the exploration issue. You know, there's explorers and then there's producers. And I'm not sure, I'm just a little concerned, this is more of a global concern about the bill, whether we aren't, you know, reducing oil taxes on the producers in hopes that the explorers will run out there and explore more. You know, the producers, BP, Exxon, ConocoPhillips, Exxon doesn't explore for oil on the North Slope, to my knowledge. BP hasn't drilled an exploration well since, I don't know when, it's probably been 10 years or more. And Conoco, you know, I guess, and it's up to them to, as you say, make their case when they come in for us to talk about their plans, but they're not sort of the driving exploratory forces on the North Slope. Other companies are, and I had one at a pizza party this weekend. Jim Weeks came by. He's the owner of Ultrastar and North Star. And you know, he said the credits, they're really happy with the credits. They like those credits. They're generous. So I'm just concerned that we may have maybe a mismatch between what we're trying to incentivize, which is exploration, and the people who are going to benefit from the bill, which are largely producers. And so it's just something that's been on my mind. It seemed like we were on that point, so thank you.
For purpose of the record, Mr. Lenny Dees is on the phone if anyone has a question of Mr. Dees with the Department of Revenue. So, anyway, Commissioner, please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wilkowski.
Okay, Mr. Chair, just for the future, it would be a request, but if we, you know, this issue of future wells, I think, is important. This was a slide that was included by the Department of Revenue. If there are slides that are included by a department or commissioner or someone testing in front of us, I would hope that they would be able to testify as to the specifics, or if not, have someone here that would be available to testify about the specifics of the slide they're presenting.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, it was our expectation that Mr. Balash would be here. I don't see him here as of yet, but this was put together with the expectation that there would be somebody from DNR to support the more DNR-related questions that would come up. Moving on to slide 8, Mr. Chairman, emphasizes some of what we see out on the North Slope in terms of potential production. Cumulative production through the year 2010 has been just over 16 billion barrels. Remaining North Slope reserves exceed 5 billion barrels.
And if I could interject, what needs to occur for a volume of oil to be classified as reserves? And again, I'm just making a distinction between the undiscovered, potentially recoverable. So what has to occur for it to be classified as reserves?
Mr. Chairman, for it to be classified reserves, it would have to be proven, and that work had been done that would tell the company and then the state that there were barrels there. We actually should have Mr. Molly call in. He can give us some detail on. Okay. Future production is going to require large investments, and I think the when the industry testifies, they'll tell you about what they're looking at and probably some estimates on what it's going to cost them in terms of what needs to be invested, in particular in some of the newer areas that of which there's no infrastructure or very little infrastructure. Most of the future production, as I'd mentioned last week, is more challenged than what's been produced previously. Talking viscous oil, heavy oil, challenges of infrastructure. And so as we look, and the next page we'll show a map of the North Slope, we're looking at an excess of 5 billion barrels, but that does not count the Agnew deposit of approximately 20 billion barrels, which is heavy oil that you had a presentation from BP on last week. It also does not include offshore volumes from the Chukchi or the Beaufort Sea in our forecast. And when Mr. Molly works with the department to put together the revenue forecast, they're very careful in not including what they see as potential down the road development that at this point doesn't appear to make economic sense. And so there may be a time in the future where Agnew would be something that would be included in the revenue forecast, but that's not anywhere that we've been as of yet.
And for purposes of the record, what royalty or production interest does Alaska have in the Chukchi or Beaufort Sea locations?
There would be none. The main point of those developments would be, number one, they would be jobs for Alaskans, and also there would be no place for them to put the oil if the length that the Trans-Alaska Pipeline works into the future doesn't coincide with the production occurring out in federal waters.
And then just for purposes of having this at the same time, what royalty or production tax interest does Alaska have in the ANWR or NPRA areas?
They would have production taxes, but they would not be royalty barrels.
Senator Wagner.
Don't we receive at least 50% of the royalty in ANWR?
Oh, I'm sorry, I have been corrected by Ms. Nienhuis, yes.
And that's still to be decided in some of the other areas, is it not?
Through the chair, Senator Wagner, I believe you're correct. I know in previous discussions about opening ANWR, that was something that was being negotiated between the federal government and the state government.
Thank you.
Slide 9 shows the areas of the North Slope that we believe have been underdeveloped. You can see in the darker shaded areas near the coast, that's where most of the development, the legacy fields, have been. Most of the production's been occurring. To the left and to the right, you see federal lands. And down just south of the North Slope area that's been developed is where the governor has identified that region as state land that the new 15% base tax rate in the bill would most likely apply to encouraging investment and production in those areas. Great Bear is in that area. Much of the Armstrong, Repsol leases are also in that area. How can we reverse the trend? A sample investor decision criteria that we put together in discussions with industry, some of the things that are weighed when making decisions on whether or not to invest include, and this certainly is not an exhaustive list, but just the general hitting on the high points, prospectivity. Is there oil out there? How much oil is out there? Geopolitical stability, which certainly...
If we could, when one uses the term prospectivity, you know, what oil is out there, is this a specific reference to conventional oil, or is this another resource other than conventional oil?
Mr. Chairman, this is a reference to conventional. However, it could be other things. I think when you hear from the industry, you'll hear from them on comments about what they think is possible, what they think is available, and those are details hopefully you'll get at that point.
Senator Likowski.
Yeah, how does Alaska rate in terms of prospectivity and geopolitical stability?
Through the chair, Senator Likowski, we believe that prospectivity, it rates very well when you compare it to certainly other countries, certainly not as well if you were to compare it, or other states, I'm sorry, certainly not as well if you were to compare it to Middle Eastern countries where they're sitting on a lot more oil than we are, but we still have a vast amount of oil compared to most other states, certainly. Geopolitical stability is also an area that the United States is very strong. Doesn't have the instability that many of the other countries that are oil-producing countries have.
Okay, Commissioner, just so you're aware, Frank Molly with your department is on the phone now and available for questions. And I can't remember if there was a specific question that Mr. Molly was calling in to address, but he is on the phone right now. Senator Stevens.
Mr. Chairman, does the health of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline enter into investor decision at all or not?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, we have heard that anecdotally it does because there's a concern about where that cutoff point is that the taps would shut down, and that can have a role in when companies look at investing in a certain field long term. We have just heard it anecdotally. I have not been into a room and heard any discussions about that, but it's been commented on that it's one of the potential negatives out there.
Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that's a pretty important issue. We keep hearing that it's all on our shoulders, the health of the pipeline, but it's certainly not. I mean, if the pipeline were to close tomorrow, there would be enormous losses to the oil companies, right?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, yes, it's certainly in their best interest to keep it flowing as well. Moving down to point three, regulations, Mr. Chairman, access to resources, development, permitting, environmental constraints. This is an area that Alaska has been as accommodating as possible. However, there are federal hurdles here that are not seen in other countries, as an example. Which makes it more difficult. And as we know with CD5 and some of what we're dealing with in OCS, those are nothing that the state has any control over, but something that's factored into when a company is weighing development here or someplace else. Operations, existing infrastructure, experience, workforce availability, the costs, the market proximity. This is an area where Alaska, it's difficult to compare it to Texas, to North Dakota, to some of the other, certainly states that produce oil, as well as the Middle Eastern areas that sit pretty close to Tidewater, in that our existing infrastructure is of benefit to the legacy fields, but it to exploring in the areas outside of it, it's going to be costly to connect to the existing infrastructure we have, as well as the workforce availability is not as easy to come by as it is in states such as Texas. And our distance from the market also makes it more difficult to make a development pencil. It's got to be more profitable because dealing with having to deal with it going a long way to market. And then the bottom one is the tax regime, which is what we're talking about with this bill, which is something that we can do something about, improving it when looking at all of the other issues and realizing that we can improve our investment climate to improve investment.
Just for purpose of record, you are not using the Fraser Report definition of the term tax regime?
Mr. Chairman, we're using tax regime in just a very broad definition because it means different things to different areas. As an example, in Alberta, it's royalty. Here, it's production tax. They're different things, but they have to be weighed by the company. So it's very difficult to have an apples-to-apples chart. We're still working on trying to find something that would give the committee a good a feel for exactly how well we stack up with other countries and other states. However, anything that is put up and anything that we look at is certainly never a complete picture, and as a result, we haven't come forward with anything yet.
You agree that under the Fraser Report, the term tax regime does not include production taxes?
Mr. Chairman, I do agree with that. However, it was our belief in including it originally that this was a sense in a survey of what industry thought of the pros and the cons of different jurisdictions, and we thought it had resonance in that under that.
I guess focusing on the, you know, what we're here to address are production taxes. Under the Fraser Report, that category, production taxes, is included in the term fiscal terms under the Fraser Report. Do you agree with that?
I believe so, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just following up on that, is there a reason you didn't include the fiscal term section in your slides presentation you did to the House, the Fraser Report?
Mr.
term?
Chairman, Senator Wilkowski, when we included it in the House Resources presentation, it was a fairly minor piece of it where we were just kind of showing a snapshot of the Fraser Report, just as we showed a snapshot of the Woodmac study that showed us 129th out of 141. That's not included in here at all. We really got caught up into the weeds of digging in, what does this mean, what does that mean, and that's kind of what I was saying, in that we haven't quite gotten to a point where it's enough apples and apples. It just confused the issue from all perspectives, and we didn't consider it. We considered it more problem than it was worth, basically.
I'll just follow up. But you would agree that the fiscal term section of the Fraser Institute report deals with, well, I'll read it to you, government requirements pertaining to royalty payments, production shares, and licensing fees, right? And that's, so when we're looking at how industry executives view Alaska, when you ask them about fiscal terms, that's really the more appropriate slide to include, as opposed to taxation regime, which includes personal and corporate and payroll taxes.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I don't necessarily agree with that. In having the conversations we had internally, we believe tax regime would represent, in particular when almost 50% of them had a negative view, when we're a state that does not have any personal income tax, that was showing a snapshot that had value.
If I could, Mr. Chair, several questions here. And let me just state for the record, I spoke with the author of the study, Jerry Angevine, who says that in looking at the Alaska oil tax structure, the production taxes and royalty payments, it's more appropriate under the fiscal terms section. Since you think that taxation regime, which is the tax burden other than for oil production, including personal, corporate, payroll, and capital taxes and complexity of tax compliance, tell me what part of your bill alleviates the personal, corporate, payroll, or capital taxes?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, there are no sections of the bill that deal with those.
Okay. And so you thought, even though your bill has absolutely nothing to do with alleviating those things, you felt it was appropriate to include a slide to make your case about why we need to reduce production and taxes.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we felt that it told a story, which was 44% of respondents when asked about Alaska's tax regime. And like I said, it's you know, you can argue where it fits in, but that was a surprisingly high number of people that found it a mild to a serious deterrent as a result of, you know, and I appreciate, Senator, what you're saying about having spoken to the author, given the other things listed under there that Alaska has relatively low, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense if you didn't take it on kind of a larger taking a look at it as from a larger view. That being said, there was enough confusion about it, and certainly as we began to dig into it, you know, we certainly haven't had the time to call through and find out what all of the respondents felt about that, and that's one of the reasons why, not just with that, but with the WoodMac survey, it was worth just setting aside because it was too confusing.
Right. Good, Mr. Chair. Did you review the question responses to fiscal terms, which deals with royalty payments and production shares, to see what sort of responses were given by industry executives?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I did not.
And if would it surprise you to know that 40% of the executives who were questioned said that Alaska's fiscal terms encourage investment, and 34% said Alaska's fiscal terms are not a deterrent to investment?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, that wouldn't surprise me at all. As we know, there are many independents and some of the new companies that are very excited about the credits up here, and I think you see a real split between the excitement about our tax regime from some of the independents that are up here looking to buy up leases, and the larger, deeper money companies, the producers, that they then have difficulty finding to partner. FEX would be a great example, where they got leases, went out, drilled, found oil, could not find any producers, who are looking at it at a completely different level than some of the independents that would be coming up like an Armstrong. And as a result, certainly there are there are parts the governor said from the very beginning that this isn't setting ACEs aside. This is trying to keep the positive in ACEs while tweaking some of the other issues. So that doesn't – long-winded way, I'm sorry, Senator, of saying that doesn't surprise me.
Follow up. So the fact that 74% of industry executives, Alaska's fiscal terms either encourage investment or is not a deterrent to investment, that fact to you is immaterial?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, it could be said the other way, too, where – and I don't have it in front of me to say what percentage it's a deterrent or is not a positive. I mean, you can play with it one way or the other, but it doesn't change the fact that people don't appear to be exploring in Alaska, and our production continues to decline. So fortunately, the industry is going to be in front of you. You'll have an opportunity to have those conversations firsthand.
If I could interject, I guess possibly as a way to address this issue that Senator Wilkowski is focusing on, you've presented a five criteria here. Do you have, or which of these criteria are most strongly correlated to decisions to invest? And have you, in these five criteria that you presented, for example, what Senator Wilkowski is saying, one of those criteria has, under the term fiscal terms, almost three-quarters of the respondents say our fiscal terms are not a deterrent or encourage, so again, of these five criteria, which is most strongly correlated to investment in Alaska, in your opinion, at this time?
Mr. Chairman, I couldn't tell you specifically which one, was the largest deterrent. That's certainly something for the companies to discuss. There is, of the five of them, there is one that this bill deals with, there is one that we can deal with. DNR is certainly working on regulations from the state side of things. We're limited on what we can do on the federal side of things. The Department of Law is certainly doing what they can with that. In terms of the rest of them, operations, geopolitical stability, and prospectivity, they are what they are. And so I think you probably hear from companies different views, slightly different views as they looked at it, because they each have different focus. Some have national, some have global. But ultimately, in terms of improving the investment climate in this state, the last one, the taxes are the one thing we can do something about.
Well, I guess I question, we have these five criteria. The legislature can do something about workforce availability. So that's something that if under operations, if under these criteria, if industry views our workforce is inadequate, then it would be up to the legislature to do something about workforce availability. That's what I'm trying to, of all of these criteria, which one in Alaska do you believe is most strongly correlated with decisions to invest, given especially that fiscal terms, 74% hold the opinion of Alaska that they do?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think you can separate them out. I can go through and I can talk about the work the Department of Labor's doing to ramp up the education of Alaskans for this work, and what the Department of Law is doing and what DOT is doing in terms of roads to resources and improving the existing infrastructure. There are things that the state can do that the state is doing, but I don't think it's as big a game changer all weighed out. They all help, but this, and like I said, you'll have the industry in front of you. You'll have an opportunity to ask them firsthand. So I can't speculate one over the other. They're all very important.
Well, can I just say something, Mr. Chair? Is this your bill or is this the industry's bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilikowski, this is the state's bill. And as the governor has said from the very beginning, we can lay out what we believe are some of the issues. We can lay out what we believe are some of the solutions to those issues. But ultimately, you're going to have to hear from the producers, from the companies, on what this means, that it is material, that it will make a difference in how they invest. And that's the other shoe. We've got one of them. We're going to lay it out. But ultimately, I think you have to see both sides of it to be convinced.
Well, I guess I would just submit it's the state's bill. It's your burden to come in and prove your case. You shouldn't be relying on industry to prove your case. The oil companies can come in and say what they want. I think the state would benefit from independent analysis, consultant analysis, expert analysis, trust but verify, as Ronald Reagan said, right? You've said that now repeatedly. Well, we want the industry to come in and prove it. No, it's your burden to prove this. This is not the industry's burden. This is your bill. You need to come in and prove your case.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I don't disagree with what you're saying, and we will lay out a case that we believe says there's a problem. It's a problem that we believe can be solved with an improved investment climate. But ultimately, as state government, as the public sector, we can't say we are going to force the private sector to do A, B, and C if this passes. You need to hear what they have to say. And that's one piece of it. So we can lay out things all we want, but ultimately taxes would never change if it was a situation where we had to have some kind of a crystal ball and state government had to somehow be able to tell the committees and tell the legislature, tell the public what was going to happen in the future as a result.
Can I ask what is the administration's belief as to the fair distribution of net profits?
Mr. Chairman, as we move through this, we will get to slides that compare the status quo to where we are. And as we kind of went through and took a look at all the different tax rates, we tried to come across what we thought was fair, what would allow the state to still get its fair share, as well as reducing taxes to the point where it would be an investment to industry. What we started out initially had to do with Governor Hammond and his one-third, 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 as I'm sure you've heard, when development first started on the North Slope, which was a third for the state government, a third for the federal government, a third for industry. And we're not there. We're certainly far in excess of a third now. And under this bill, we would continue to be in excess. But we hoped that what we had laid out would be something that would be material for the industry. After the bill was released in our conversations, they did say it was, in fact, a material change and would cause them to reevaluate the decisions they were going to make in terms of Alaska. And that's where we are today.
If I could follow up, is there we're here under a production tax system that looks to net profits, and is there a percentage of net profits that the administration has in mind as the fair goal that the state should be advocating?
Mr. Chairman, there is not a specific percent of profit coming back to the state. One of the aspects of this bill and of the current law is that it's progressivity, and depending on where you are, you're at a different level. The governor mentioned last week at his press conference that when you look at the price of oil at $60 or $70 a barrel, we line up fairly equally with other jurisdictions. When you get up to where we are today at $114, $115 a barrel, that gets us to a point where we're taxing at a higher level than other areas are.
Again, that raises a different... Anyway, Senator Willikowski.
Well, I just on that point, Mr. Chair, I read the governor's statement on that where he said we're an outlier. And can you give me the details of what countries or what states he's comparing us to being an outlier to? Because when I look at the government take figures, at those numbers, I don't see us as being an outlier. But tell me what analysis you've done that shows we're an outlier at those prices.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Willikowski, we certainly are an outlier nationally. And in terms of this country, comparing it to any other state, when you compare it to other countries, and I don't have the data in front of me right now, but it becomes very difficult to try to, as I mentioned earlier, make an apples-to-apples comparison because we're dealing with a lot of different situations. As an example, a Middle Eastern country that is sitting on many times the oil Alaska is, very close to where it can be exported, is in a different situation with very low labor costs, is in a different situation in terms of what they can live with than, as an example, Alaska situation.
Senator McGuire, I actually went.
Thank you, through the chair. And I just wanted to make a comment to two comments back to Senator Willikowski, that I do think that it's common when we introduce bills, sometimes we do them by request, and that's very specific that an industry will come to us and say, we want you to introduce this particular incentive for us. And then other times, like in this case, it's an issue where we as lawmakers or you at the gubernatorial level recognize that there's an issue that people are talking about loudly in the state and have now been for a couple of years. About the fact that we are not seeing the exploration on the North Slope that we used to see. And we are, in fact, seeing a decline in the throughput of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Those are facts. And those facts bear consideration. As a result of that, I just want to say on the record that I don't see anything that indicates in any of the testimony or anything that the governor has put out or any conversations I've had that says that the governor has put this out at the direction of the industry or anything like that. It rather, what I see is an attempt on your part, Commissioner, and the part of the governor to elicit conversation, to say this is our stab at it. We believe that there is clearly an issue with respect to investment and exploration and development, and we have got to address the throughput issue. It is our lifeline. It's our main artery. We as lawmakers also have a broader obligation to say, how do we diversify our economy? We're 90% dependent on one main artery. If you were as a human being and that particular artery were beginning to clog up, you'd be seeing a doctor immediately. So I think that it's incumbent on all of us to remember that we're a partnership. We have the resources. They are all of ours and contained in subsurface rights uniquely in our Constitution, unlike Texas and other places where they're privately held for the most part. So it's a partnership that we're looking at. And when we have that dialogue, I hope it's not adversarial, that rather it's one of eliciting what can we do to make the climate here more investment friendly for those of you who are unhappy. Senator Willikowski points out that 74% of industry executives say they're happy. Let's find out which ones are and which ones aren't. I think, as I stated on Friday, that the folks that are exploring, the wildcatters, are very happy. We did a good job in ACES of incentivizing that high risk activity of getting out there and really taking that chance. The state is partnering at an unprecedented level. Some states don't want to do that. Some jurisdictions don't want to do it. They say, no, we only want to partner with you on output. Now what we've got to do is look at the production part of it itself and say, what does it take to incentivize you to get actual throughput in? And that's what we're talking about. So it's not that they're mutually exclusive. They have to be considered side by side. I don't believe that there's anything whatsoever in any of the testimony that I've read or anything I've heard that says this is an industry bill or that you're doing it for the industry. In fact, I think it's the opposite. Governor Parnell has been very, very conservative with respect to his timing on this. I mean, even in the face of a closed primary, he held back and waited to really consider whether or not he would offer something. So I think we have to approach this very cautiously. We're hearing your attempt at it. We'll hear the industries, but we need to be very careful in our rhetoric that we don't enter into a courtroom climate that I sometimes feel like we're doing, where we're somehow in an adversarial tone and dialogue. We're a partnership here. We want to see the state succeed. We have to do it in partnership with the folks who know how to do it. And it's for the benefit of the employees who are Alaskans. And it's for the benefit of our state coffers. And so I just say that on the record, and I appreciate your indulgence, Mr. Chairman.
Please continue, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question. Senator Wilkowski has a question.
Yeah, on slide 10. Looking at these five investor criteria, getting back to Senator Passavant's question, how are these ranked? How does the industry go about ranking these things when making a decision where to invest?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, these are just sample big picture topics that the department put together. Those would be questions that you would have to ask individual companies. I think that, when you're looking at a multinational, obviously it would be shifted somewhat. Geopolitical stability is going to mean a lot more to a company that invests in countries all over the world than it would in a smaller company that just deals with North America.
How would you say tax regime was the most important thing that companies look at?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I couldn't say specifically if that's the case. Obviously, prospectivity would be tremendous. If there's not the oil available for the development, you wouldn't even be worried about what the tax structure was in the first place.
Do you think it would be beneficial for you to know how important tax regime was when making a decision to drastically alter the tax regime?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, in the conversations we've had, tax structure has been very important. In the meetings we've had, there has not been a company that I have met with or talked to that has said it's number one, and number two is regulations, and number three is, I don't know that it's that simple. There are many important factors, and that's one of them. Certainly an important factor, and I'd be surprised if you were to find a company that didn't list that as one of their most important factors in evaluating where they're going to invest their dollars.
Another question. You've cited the fact that Alaska has highest taxes in the United States. Why would any company invest in Alaska? We've always had higher taxes than in the lower 48. Why would anyone ever invest in Alaska then? Why wouldn't they take all their dollars and invest them in North Dakota or Texas?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilkowski, it's because we would be rated so high in prospectivity. Huge field, obviously, Prudhoe Bay, largest one in North America, and we continue to have more oil than other states. And as a result of that, there's going to be more interest in exploring in Alaska than in the very low tax rates of Illinois, as an example. That very low taxes, but it doesn't mean a whole lot if the prospectivity isn't high.
Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Next, it's the production tax overview. We can go through these fairly quickly because I think most of the committee is fairly experienced in how this works. PTV production tax value is the market price of oil minus the transportation costs and allowable lease expenditures. The allowable lease expenditures include operating and capital expenditures. And then the base tax rate is on the PTV is 25%.
I think we can move past that unless anyone thinks they need to spend time on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is just a more visual view of what page 12 discussed. The base tax plus the progressivity equals total taxes before credits, and then subtract the credits that are applied against the taxes, and you get a total production taxes owed.
Senator French.
I do have a question on this slide, Mr. Chairman, if I could. It would be helpful to me to see the governor's bill projected against this dollar breakdown. I'm still kind of having a hard time just figuring out which piece of the fiscal note sort of moves which piece of the bill and vice versa, and this would be a good place for me to sort of see it broken down to dollars at a constant barrel per barrel price. So I don't know if you've done one, but that would be helpful.
Through the chair, Senator French, we can certainly get that to the committee.
Thank you.
And by that, there's in other documents we've seen FY10, FY11, and FY12, what the application of this would be, of this Senate Bill 49 to FY10, 11, and 12.
Mm-hmm. We'll do that, Mr. Chairman.
And then with respect to FY12, the $2,754,000,000, that is 28.5% of the production tax value?
It works out to, 33.1% and then minus the credit, so I don't know off the top of my head specifically what that percentage is.
Assuming the math is right, what the tax that is actually paid is 28.5% of the production tax value.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if that's the way the math works, it's... Yes. Also, to let the committee know, the department will be coming out with a spring revenue forecast in the next couple of weeks. So these numbers were based on our fall revenue forecast. So these numbers will be changing. And when we have the numbers, when we have the hard numbers solidified, we'll bring forward this to give you a more recent snapshot of how we see the FY12 production tax than we did in the fall.
Please continue.
I can walk through this for the committee if they'd like me to.
Mr. Dees is going to be here Wednesday on the tax cut, so I think we can just – I think we already maybe went through page 17 in an earlier presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That brings us to slide 18, which we might have shown this one when we walked through the bill previously, but it simply shows the nominal production tax rate, with the blue line being the nominal rate for ACEs at 25% base, and then moving up the slope. The red represents the SB 49 unitized fields of the same 25% base rate with brackets, instead of the way progressivity is currently factored. You can see that we mimic the ACEs slope with the bill. And then the green would represent in the bill the non-unitized fields, the nominal rates, which would be a 15% base rate as opposed to 25%. Same slope and capping at 40% instead of 50%.
Just for purpose of clarification, no credits are factored into this graphing.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman. This is just the nominal, what the numbers are in the bill.
And for example, at a $30 PTV value, the production tax is approximately 10%. In other words, about 15% below the base tax rate.
Could you repeat that again, Mr. Chairman?
Sorry. In other words, the production tax rate at a $30 PTV, your x-axis is PTV dollars.
Correct.
Not barrels of crude dollars.
That is correct.
So at $30 PTV value, the tax rate is 10-11%?
The tax
when
rate?
When one factors credits in.
I couldn't off the top of my head.
Through the chair, Bruce Tangeman, Deputy Commissioner for Department of Revenue. That would depend on an individual company's tax credits and their liability. So different levels of tax credits would determine that starting point.
Senator Willett-Counsel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, how much would your bill have, how much in reduced revenue would the state have taken in had your bill been in effect for since the passage of ACES?
We'll have to get back to you. Through the chair, we'll get back to you on that, Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. And also I would ask, when doing your, in your, when we get into your fiscal note, if you could get us information, I know you have the reduction to the Treasury based on your forecast over the years. I would like to see those numbers projected also at $100 and $110 and $120, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, absolutely. 100, 110, 120?
Yes, please.
Slide 19 takes a look at the marginal government take. This is, you can see that the marginal continues to grow, but at a slower rate than it grows under the current ACES progressivity. It eliminates the 93% marginal tax rate effect that you hear frequently from the industry that it continues to take more in for the state as the price of oil goes higher up into the 50% cap. It's just not as steep as the progressivity in current law.
We can move to page 20.
Okay, page 20 is a breakdown of at different ANS West Coast prices of the current law. And the blue is the producer's percentage of profit.
If we could interject, does you use the term profit, and does that include royalty?
Mr. Chairman, it does. This is, I believe, all-inclusive, factoring in the upstream cost, the transportation, and the credit.
So this is, this does not depict the relationship of the production tax of the state relative to the producers, looking purely at a production tax with or without credits applied.
Right. This is inclusive of credits. And so in taking a look at it, you see that, to use an example of $115 a barrel, which is about a dollar above what it is today, the state take at $115 would be 57%, the producer take would be 28%, and the federal take would be 15%. I mentioned earlier Governor Hammond's one-third, one-third, one-third. You can see that it's quite a ways from that. And then we'll be able to show you a comparison on how our bill looks in comparison to the current law.
No, Senator French is fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I heard Senator Passman ask the question, but are you saying that let's just use $90 a barrel as an example? We're all looking at the same bar now. You're saying that the 50% share of profit includes the state's royalty share, the owner's share?
Yes, it's net of the royalty.
So the 50% includes the state's 1/8 owner's share. And if that's true, I guess I would encourage you to go back and rerun that graph, because that, to me, doesn't help me very much. I'm trying to work off of what ACES does, not what the royalty does. We're not going to renegotiate the royalty here. That's set. We're done with that, unless the oil industry wants to come in, I guess, and ask for royalty reduction, but that's, again, the subject for a different hearing. I'm working off of slide 14. If you go back to slide 14 for a second, please. Slide 14 is what I think of as ACES, the production tax. That's what ACES is about. And the slide I have here shows me that at $82 a barrel, that out of a production tax value of $9.6 billion, we get $2.7 billion. That strikes me as being less than a third of that. So my request is that, and that must leave a lot more for industry, because that's two-thirds left for industry, and I don't know what they give the federal government. But we're taking way less than a third at $82 a barrel. That's the relationship I need information about, how ACES treats oil company profits, not how we deal with the royalty share, because that's set in stone. We're not changing that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think it's also important to understand that in using the FY12 projected, the costs on that are $6.39 and $26. You know, you've used the upstream costs at $20, so there's short $6, so that downgrades the deductions and potentially the credits, and it gooses up the rate of progressivity by factoring costs out.
We can make that adjustment, Mr. Chairman.
And just, again, so that in analyzing the percentages split between, and I've done that for FY 10, 11, and 12, the state in 10 get 29.5%, state in 11 gets 28%, and 12 gets 28.5% of the PTV value. Those are the calculations using the DOR production tax projections. We need to get to a specific baseline on what the costs are and all of that. So, Senator McGuire.
Thank you. Mine's really quick. Through the chair, while we're getting numbers straight, though, on slide 20, I do think it's helpful because when businesses look at profit, it's not relevant to them who they have to pay taxes to or in what category. It just means less profit. And that's a fact. We can disagree whether we think it should mean less to them that they're paying it in royalty or property taxes or whatever. But the simple fact is it's less money they bring back to their shareholders. So what I do think might be helpful, however, would be to say in the green part of it, is there a way, Commissioner, to divide out the green bars and tell us what part between the four taxes is allocated? And that's, again, just a reminder of how complex our system is.
Through the chair, Senator McGuire, absolutely, and we can do that.
Have you estimated a percent of taxes that are paid to the U.S. government in the federal portion?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we have.
And does that also include the federal portion? Does it also include royalty, federal royalty?
Chairman, that's just the federal income tax portion.
The reason why I ask, unlike, for example, the FY12, it includes federal barrels. And so that's – anyway, Senator Wagner.
Well, that's what I've been looking at all the time. I think – the federal take on this is not accurate.
Interesting.
Because if you're including the royalty in there and other items in there, that would make the federal tax calculation be off, would it not?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wagner, that's a good question. I don't know. Maybe Sherry Nienheis can come up and shed a little light on this.
Again, Sherry Dienheis, Department of Revenue, Petroleum Economist. Mr. Chairman, as far as the federal portion, it is just the corporate, or yeah, the federal income tax, corporate income tax. As far as the portion of our proceeds that actually come from federal waters and to which federal royalties are assessed, is relatively minor. I think what we tried to show here is the greater, you know, the bigger scheme that most of the barrels on the North Slope are state barrels. If we were to divide up everything, we'd also have to then talk about private royalties and all that too. And those portions, at least at this point in time, are pretty small. So we just chosen to show the federal corporate income tax on this.
In part, my question is for example, on FY12 projected, there is a federal and state royalty barrels that are included in there. But so if you've included in the state's percentage federal royalty barrels.
Chairman, just a point of order. I'm not sure what you're – okay, you're back at – okay, that's yes. Slide. Yep.
In other words, that's where I'm getting very confused that, you know, because that figure is about 15.1% that when one deducts from the gross value of the oil – our share is 12.5%, so the federal barrels are another 2.6%. So if you include that 2.6% in the state share, then that's distorting it completely.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, you're correct. And actually, I believe the royalty is probably a little higher than that. Actually, it's not 12.5% across the entire North Slope. Each lease has slightly different royalties. So. Actually, I think the royalty percentage is a little bit closer to 13% for the state. But yet, you're correct. We are including federal barrels in there. The federal barrels mostly come from North Star. So we could deduct those out if that's something you'd like to see on future models. I think we were trying to just depict what a typical state, a barrel produced on state land would receive.
Senator French and Senator Wilkowski.
Right, but we're talking about ACEs, and so I guess I find that you know both those words there are misleading because you're not talking about ACEs, you're talking about total global tax take. It's a fair thing to talk about, but I think you have to be very specific when you're doing that. And I guess that leads to the question: the 50%, I take it, if includes royalty barrels, it also includes corporate income tax, and they're having property tax as well.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, total tax take. Okay, share of total profit, not ACEs, just per barrel. Thank you.
Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you. Just 2 points. Point one is on the Governor Hammond, a third statement. I guess I would just keep in mind that Governor Hammond was here when we had a gross tax, and I think if you were to look at the gross third, we're probably not too far off of that, quite frankly, off the with our tax rate. But just another point would be looking at the costs the state contributes to at least an unsuccessful development project. I know your department last year presented us with a slide. I know you included some of those slides in your presentation to the House regarding the costs for unsuccessful development projects, and the slide that was presented to us by your department last year was that the state share for an unsuccessful development project for an existing producer was 76%, the federal share was 8%, and the company share was 15%. So in looking at these numbers, if the state is contributing 76% to the unsuccessful development project costs of an existing producer, I think it's fair for us to get a fair share back from that.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we believe this bill provides us a fair share.
Who prepared this slide? In other words, who did the numbers, prepared the numbers from which this slide was presented? In other words, where would we get the support calculations? For example, at $65.90 and $115 a barrel.
Mr. Chairman, it was provided by a model the DOR has.
Is that something that the the doc or the numbers that these percentages came from can be provided to us. In other words, what I'm trying to figure out is, are they basing it upon a certain volume of oil? Are they, you know, what are they? How are you deriving those numbers?
Mr. Chairman, you're asking if it's a model that can be, that you can manipulate the numbers, or?
What's your base? Are you at 650,000 barrels a day? Are you at 600? You know, I see here that you're at 600,000 barrels a day, but again, I don't know how you come up with the 18%, the 50%, and the 33% at $90 a barrel. Those numbers would be useful to see so we can track the thinking of how those percentages were derived so that we can understand the message that was intended to be delivered by showing those percentages.
Chairman Pascan, Bruce Tangeman, Department of Revenue. We have that model, and we can certainly provide it to your staff, and they can fiddle with it as much as they want. There's a certain number of variables that you can adjust, and then it flows through to this type of slide. There's probably a dozen different types of slides that you can look at. Some people like to look at things in different ways, but it's a complex model, but it's simplistic in the toggles that you have to deal with as far as the throughput, the price, upstream costs, etc.
Thank you very much. I would very much want to take advantage of that, mm-hmm. And in particular with respect to this slide, what were the variables, if any, other than those that are depicted at the bottom of the page? That's what I'm trying to find out. Where are the numbers, and how do you get there so that, you know, we're still talking apples to apples as compared to apples to oranges in our discussion?
So that you see what we're putting in and the accuracy of it to legitimize the numbers.
Senator Wagner.
Yeah, if you do any comparisons of our tax system, and I hate to say North Dakota, I'm sick and tired of hearing about North Dakota. Because, number one, we don't have the royalty figures that people are paying in North Dakota or being paid in North Dakota. Some people get different royalties than other people get. But we also don't see other taxes, whether there's local county taxes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So in that case, if you show us this graph again that's on page 20, I hope you take that green section and break it down so we can see how much of that is 12.5% royalty, how much is corporate, how much is property tax, because really property tax is something we have no control over, because up on the North Slope, 19-point-some percent of the property tax goes to the borough over there. We're not going to forgive any of that. So I'd like to see that broken out that way instead of just a green bar that says we take this percentage, because I agree with the other statements. We're talking about production tax. We're not talking about ACEs in total. We're talking about just a portion of ACEs, and this doesn't reflect that at all.
Through the chair, Senator Wagner, we'd be happy to do that breakdown for you. What we were looking at was taking a look at just very broadly on state land, on what we'd be looking at, adding everything up. But obviously, we can also understand the interest and importance of having that breakdown.
And follow up, I don't want you to leave state land. I'm not interested in what we get in federal lands right now. I think we just need to hone in on what we get in the state lands. That's the model I want to see.
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In your revenue projections, what over the next decade, what is the highest average ANS West Coast price that you foresee?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilkowski, just one second.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wilikowski, in 2020, we have projected an ANS West Coast of 111.84.
Okay, thank you.
Senator French.
Which sort of drives the next question, which is, if that's the highest price you projected, why does your graphs, more than half of this graph, is directed to prices that you do not anticipate that we are going to see?
Through the chair, Senator French, we just wanted to lay out all of the prices over. We certainly could have curbed it at 190 or at 165 or at 140. However, it's just the way we laid it out. Focusing specifically and putting 115 in there simply because that's where we are today.
Right. Well, you didn't know that when you made the graph. The 115 is there just as a waypoint. I'm going to take it.
Through the chair, Senator French, well.
Or did you just get extraordinarily lucky that this
no.
is the day?
Senator French, to the chair, again, we can manipulate the model to show whatever ANS price we would like, and we thought that was representative.
Sure, sure. But I, you know, to me it's more helpful to look at, you know, you guys are the ones who are studying this and telling me what you expect the price to be. That's the base case. We can always think about what happens if oil goes to $265 a barrel. But to me it's more productive to spend time on the more likely range of outcomes. You can produce any graph you want to produce, but my I guess helpful suggestion is, you know, aim at the center of the target. Educate us about what you, you know, want to see the tax structure look like at prices you're predicting, and then we can go from there. Thank you.
And commissioners, so that you understand why I'm struggling with this, if in your FY11 you're using $78 a barrel for crude, so if you put that halfway between 65 and 90, under the FY11 production tax projected, the state's percentage of the gross is 14.8% is our production tax, and if our royalty is 13%, that the states take for the royalty plus production tax is 27.8%. How do you get from there, if you are including both production tax and royalty cumulatively at 27.8% of the gross, to between 42% and 50% as shown on this graph? I'm confused by that.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we're happy to give you a breakdown on that.
Any further questions? That we have about 3 minutes and then we'll wrap it up today. So. Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you. Why, just looking, I guess, at page 20, well, comparing 20 to page 20 to 21, what's the policy reason behind lowering the state's share at $40 a barrel?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, lowering the state's share at $40.
Well, it looks to me like you're lowering the state's share under page 20 is 40%, and page 21 is being lowered to 36%. I mean, you guys came up with the numbers that you did. My recollection is that on the sort of the crossover point, the point at which we made more money than under the old ELF system was around $52 or so, and looks like here we're lowering at the we're going at the low end even lower than we would have under ELF, and I'm just curious what the policy rationale is behind that.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we focused as we worked on what tax rates we'd want to look at in this bill. We focused more on what Senator French had kind of mentioned, the sweet spot of where we saw the oil price landing more in line with and, you know, taking a look at the current, it's slightly below the current law, which also would take a lower percentage at a lower oil price, and when we worked out the combination of the brackets and the percentages, it came to a smaller percentage across the board, not just in the, you know, $100 and higher range as an example.
Well, given that, thank you very much, Commissioner. Our next meeting is 3:30 Wednesday, March 16th, and at that time, the Department of Revenue will be providing this committee information on the credit system that we are operating under, and we believe that that's going to be very informative, and so we thank you for your testimony today, Mr. Butcher, Mr. Tangeman. Very much appreciate that. So with that, meeting adjourned.